Hi, I'm Vic Carucci, and I'm so glad that you're with us for this latest edition of Cleveland Browns Weekend right here on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. We have a jam-packed hour of Browns conversation for you this morning with so many topics to cover. We'll give you a review of the offseason workouts with a thorough look at every position from people who, like me, watch this team on a regular basis. And one of those areas that we're talking about is the offensive line. And joining us this morning will be George Warhop, one of the Browns' two offensive line coaches. George is one of the few holdovers from the previous coaching staff, and his knowledge and experience are important to the evolution of the Browns' offense under the direction of Coach Rob Chudzinski and offensive coordinator North Turner. You'll also hear from the voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan. We'll talk about some of the burning topics that will be on the forefront of our collective thoughts between now and the time training camp officially opens on July 25th. Scott Petrick is a veteran Browns beat writer for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. We'll get his thoughts on the team's offseason workouts, including a whole lot of discussion about quarterback Brandon Whedon. National voices always have a place on this show, and we have a really good one for you this morning. He's Mike Silver, who covers the NFL for YahooSports.com. Mike has some very interesting thoughts to share about the Browns and about the big news of Tim Tebow joining the New England Patriots and how Mike might very well have influenced that. So all of that is ahead on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. And let's get things started this morning with our conversation with Browns offensive line coach George Warhop.
Coach, so much is talked about with regard to continuity in the offensive line. And I think a perfect example of maintaining continuity is the fact that you're back here coaching this line along with Coach Mike Sullivan as well. But that's important to keep that going.
Yeah, I think it is. I think we have a really good group. We have a lot invested in this group, and you know, they've gotten better every year. So it was a good opportunity for me to stay. And I welcomed that opportunity.
And how does it change for you to work now with a different head coach in Rob Chudzinski, a different offensive coordinator in North Turner, but the same group of guys that you're coaching, essentially? How does it change from your standpoint?
Really, from my point of view, not a whole lot of change. But just in terms of how we do stuff, how we go about technique-wise, communication-wise, and that doesn't change. What changes is, you know, Rob's perspective of what he wants, and I had the opportunity to work with Norv in San Francisco. So I fully understand how Norv is wired and what he wants and how he wants it done. So that part of it's easy. Even working with Rob is very easy, just plugging into what he wants and how he wants it done.
I would think the biggest difference in pass protection under these coaches and this scheme versus what you did previously is that blockers basically got to hold their blocks longer. It's more that vertical game, right, and longer developing pass patterns.
I don't buy into that. Norv gets the ball out. I know in San Francisco there was never an issue with the quarterback holding the ball. I don't anticipate that being an issue here now.
So even if the patterns take a while to develop, the quarterback is getting it out to that first open guy soon enough that blockers aren't under any extra duress.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because in San Francisco, I'll be honest, you know, Norv came in, he says, you know, we're a seven-step drop team, we do this, this, and this. I'm like, really? is this going to be an issue? And it was outstanding. Again, they don't hold the ball. I mean, seven steps, you know, everybody talks about seven steps or a vertical passing game. That's a bit of a misnomer. I mean, we block for a spot. We've always blocked for a spot. And with Norv, the ball comes out quicker. It'll probably come out faster than it did a year ago.
What have been some of your observations of how this line has worked through the offseason, through the OTAs, through mini camp? What are some of the things that have jumped out at you?
For the first, our leaders, Alex and Joe, I thought they did a nice job. I thought they came back. You know, we have a new strength coach, a new program, and I think they plugged into that, and that carried over to what we're doing in the off-season program or the OTAs. To see Mitch progress, which was very encouraging, and to get Jason back and get him plugged in and get him up to speed again. So to see those guys come back in, be ready to work and go at it as they did, to see Jason come back in and really starting to get back up to speed and create some competition at guard. And then the young guys were brought in. You know, the kid Gilkey's got a chance to be a contributor at some point in time, and Gerard Shaw's had a good spring.
You mentioned Mitchell Schwartz, the right tackle, who started as a rookie all last year. What's different about him in year two other than the fact that it is year two?
He's just more comfortable. He understands, you know, what I'm asking him to do. He's just a little bit more settled in anticipation of what's coming at him and how to deal with certain situations. So it's just a natural process of growing into being a pro, and he's doing that very well.
Did you give him some, I'm sure you did, but if you can give me just some highlights of what it was that you talked with him about at the end of last season to sort of work on things he needed to focus on through the offseason, and how has that come together?
You know, at the end of last year, it really for him was just trusting himself in pass pro, just trusting his set, trusting his hands, trusting what he sees, and he's done that. And then, you know, it's other things we have to continue to work with him is just how he uses his hands as a means of protecting himself and knocking hands off, and all that he's done. He did it, you know, at the start of the OTAs. He was doing a very nice job of it at the end of the OTAs, and that's something we'll progress and continue to do. And Mitch is a very good run blocker. You know, people talk about the protection part of it and him being a rookie starter, but he is a very good and physical run blocker, and that showed also this spring.
George Warhop, offensive line coach for the Browns. You mentioned Jason Pinkston, and it has to, I know it did for me, it has to do your heart pretty well to see him just back out there after all the trauma, what he went through last year with the blood clot in his lung, how scary a situation that was, and to see him now at a point where he can come out and practice. What's that mean to you?
Well, it really is what it means to him. I mean, I'm his coach. I'm ecstatic to have him out there just participating, but for him to know that his career can continue, I mean, that's outstanding for him and his family. Now, from a football standpoint, you know, we had to kind of bleed him in slowly at the last week OTAs, and the mini camp was the first time he was fully taking all his reps. So now we're going to training camp, and we'll see what happens. We got three guys who can start. And I personally don't care which two start. We'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, you mentioned, of course, the three people in that rotation. You've got John Greco, who filled in admirably for Jason last year. You got Sean Laval at that other spot. John Greco showing, I think, as a veteran, that he could be more than a stopgap guy, and he's been working with a lot of first-team work through this offseason.
Yeah, and John, you know, he's an interesting guy. When he came out of Toledo, you know, I called him up, you know, and he was a late ad, and I said, hey, you know, they told me to call you, they're thinking about you being a free agent. I said, but you're probably going to get drafted, so this is a wasted phone call. I don't know if he even remembers that, but you know, when we got him in there, he plugged in and he transitioned well, and we had him playing tackle, guard, and center, and he kind of settled in inside, and John's a dependable guy, and all he needed was an opportunity. You know, and it's sad that it came about the way it did, but for, you know, his benefit, he got to start, I believe it was 10 games, played in 11, and to show his what he has, you know, his wares and how dependable he is, how talented he is. So, you know, having him here has made a huge difference.
And Sean Laval, just where you see him in the course of his development right now?
You know, Sean, he started 32 games for us now, and I believe he started one as a rookie, played some center as a rookie. Sean's as tough a guy as we got, and he's quiet, doesn't say much, but, you know, him and O'Neal Cousins, if you knew you were going to need some stuff, something's going to happen, those are two guys, I don't care where you are, you want them with you because you know they're going to die right there with you. So Sean is as tough as there is. He's gotten so much better in his time here. And this spring, I mean, you could see it from about the second week of OTAs on, he's really elevated his game. So, as I said, you know, we got three guys that can start, so we'll see what happens.
So with Joe Thomas and with Alex Mack, it gets to be easy to take guys like that for granted, that they're as good as they are and they're just going to be there and be steady and you don't worry about them. But I'm sure, again, as a coach, you're looking at everybody, studying even any nuances that might be different than before. Well, give me a breakdown of both of those guys as they enter this season.
You know, Joe is extremely consistent, and Joe does a good job of self-evaluating, and he listens. So you don't have to do a whole lot with Joe in terms of correcting a whole lot of technique issues or whatnot. But, you know, sometimes his feet will get out of whack or his hands will get out of whack or whatever, and all you got to do with him is say, hey, Joe, this is this, and he fixes it immediately. It's not a process of taken him days to get it done. You say it, it's fixed, and he works on it the next day. And that's all players. You know, he might lose track of something here or there, but really with him, it's not hard to coach him and to get him to stay on track. He does it himself for the most part. And then with Alex, you know, Alex is pretty amazing, actually. I mean, the guy is, I don't know, 310, 308. He's extremely athletic. He is extremely smart. Of all the guys that had the most put on him with the change, it's him. He sees the defense, the protection changes, and he's really embraced that. And he did a fantastic job this spring against Ray Horton's defense, which you see everything known to man. And he sifted most of it out and made the corrections, even stuff we hadn't talked about. You know, he put it together out there and made decisions during the course of practice that allowed us to do some stuff and made it very smooth for everybody involved. So, you know, all I can say about Alex Mack is his growth. He's going into his fifth year. He's been phenomenal.
I'm glad you brought up that defense because I was going to go there next. Just seeing that on a daily basis in practice, all the variables, the multiple fronts, the aggressiveness, and the general mentality of a defense that attacks, this is different than what this offensive line has dealt with previously. So I would assume it is a good thing to have to deal with that on a regular basis in practice, especially in helping this group get ready for two games a year against the Steelers, two games a year against the Ravens.
Anytime you can put yourself in a situation where you have to make adjustments, and sometimes there are adjustments that you don't have a chance to talk about, it just builds the foundation and it actually builds the confidence of the group that, you know, going into the season, we're not going to see much more than we're seeing now. We're not going to be challenged more than we're being challenged now. So even if we're going into a game and they give us something that we haven't discussed or we haven't seen before, at least not from that group, it's going to be an easy transition on Sunday. So to me, as much as Ray can give us, the better off we are in the long run.
And how does it work with the division of duties with you and Mike Sullivan as far as working together?
We just work together. That's pretty much how it goes down. I mean, Mike, he and I are very different. You know, he's a little more quiet. I'm a little bit more vocal. But I think it's a very good match. It's good for the players because they hear two different perspectives. It's good that, you know, he's been with Norv, and as I've been with Norv, he's been with Chud. So he brings that side of it to it. So we just divide it up and we go.
Coach, thank you so much.
No problem. Anytime.
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Joined now by the voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan. So, Jim, with off-season workouts completed, what would you say the number one area of this football team that's going to be on your mind, that's going to maybe keep you awake at night over these next 6 weeks or so before training camp?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to miss Josh Gordon for those first two games. So that was a little bit of a disappointment. And I know to a lot of people, wherever I went over the weekend, I'm sure you too, Vic. Mm-hmm. I mean, people were wondering about that because I think we think the young man's got very special abilities. So, I mean, that's going to be tough. I'm interested, I think right now, and I think maybe I'm going to surprise you, Vic, but I am interested in seeing this defense because we've seen so much of the offense through the OTAs and the minicamp. And I think that's how that's built anyway,
right?
The installation. And I know they're installing both ends and certainly all three if you go to the special teams. But I'm interested now to see what the defense can do because the only true vision of that will come once they put pads on and they start hitting, and that happens in training camp. I think that you can talk about, you know, being able to participate in the mini camps and the OTA sessions, but to really see how this is going to work and Ray Horton's true vision of this defense, I don't think we'll truly get that until we see them in training camp and in pads and hitting and tackling and then the preseason game. So that's the next area that is going to intrigue me.
Back to the Gordon conversation.
Yep.
Are you, though, comfortable at all with the rest of the receiving corps enough to say that it could overcome Gordon's absence on the basis of depth, or do you think just taking him out of there just leaves it like a gaping void?
Well, the more I watched him, the more I would say it really concerns me that he's not there because and believe me, that's a compliment to him.
Sure.
Because I watched him really.
He had a great offseason.
Unbelievable. I mean, physically looks great. And then he's just growing into the offense, and they're growing into him. I mean, they know where to go, where to dial it up to find him, and it's usually a big play. I am confident. I think they'll probably have to – I will say this. I think, Vic, they're going to have to change their attack in those first two games without him. Now, are there people that can do that? Yeah, I think so. And I think there's in such an infancy in the new offense that it's probably – you know, going to be a little bit more tolerable to take at this point in time. But I just think that the Browns can ill afford to lose people like that. They couldn't afford to lose Joe Hayden last year, and they did. And they struggled with that. And I'm not so sure they can afford to lose a big weapon in this offense like Josh Gordon. Yet, if you're going to do it, I guess earlier is better than, you know, later in the middle of the year.
Well, that's such a great point because I had the opportunity to talk with North Turner the other day in the facility, and he didn't seem like the ceiling fell on him.
Yeah.
He didn't have that approach. And I'm not – I know Norv, as a rule, is a guy who kind of keeps himself pretty, you know, the poker face and so forth, doesn't let you see all the emotions. But actually, he was in a pretty good mood, and I thought he'd be in a worse one because this was only shortly thereafter the suspension announcement. But I got the sense from him, just as you said, two things, that it's two games and not four, not more.
Right.
That it's early, that he has now a whole training camp, basically, in preseason and the rest of whatever this offseason is, because I know coaches will unplug and take some vacation time, but they're taking work home with them. No one's kidding anybody. I talked, you know, talking with George Warhop just about his scheduling as well. They're packing stuff up to take home. And George will be on the show, by the way, in a little bit. But I sense that there is a real plan, and I'm not entirely sure how it's going to look, but a true plan for these first two games that allow this team to make up for Gordon's absence.
Yeah, well, and they'll have to do that. There's no question to succeed and to not totally, abandon things because he's not there. It just would have been great to see him there, and I think fans were excited to see him because there have been so many glowing reports. We've been the voices of that that have watched him progress this offseason, and he's had a great offseason. So, it's always tough then when you'll see him play in those four preseason games, and the Browns will play him, and you'll see him out of practice every day, and then realize that he's a scratch on those first two games,
right. That
he's not available. So, go get him, Greg Little. Go get him, Travis Benjamin. Go get him, Devon Bess. Do what you can do. The tight ends, I thought, really look good. I don't think all is lost, and I'm glad to hear that Norv feels the same way too. But, I think it was a little bit of an uppercut, I think, that everybody got hit with.
And go get him Trent Richardson.
Go get him running. Yes, absolutely. Go get him Trent Richardson. And, listening to Richardson defend himself and his health and his physical shape and the confidence that he has that he'll be ready to go, all of that is good too. Yeah, I mean, that is if Trent Richardson is going to be a huge part of this offense, it will start definitely on opening day, and it might even become a bigger chunk now because of that news late last week.
Jim Donovan, voice of the Browns. And Jim, you mentioned the defense and how you're anxious to see how it looks when the hitting does take place.
Right.
I think a couple of things. I don't know that we've said enough about how well Jabal Sheard has performed through this offseason, because he did some things, his movement on the field, and I was tempering it. I was saying, well, maybe it's just because I'm not seeing him with his hand down, and seeing him up and moving makes him look faster, makes him look more dynamic. But you know what? I think he's fast and dynamic. I think he's got the two qualities you want, an outside linebacker, and why not give it up to him? He's doing well.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's got it, don't hide it. I mean, he is he's a very special player. He had a great rookie year. I thought he had a slow start last year, and a lot of people thought, well, Phil Taylor's not in there, and maybe Jabal is getting extra attention because Taylor's not in there, and they can devote more to shutting Sheard down. When Taylor did get in there, there was a noticeable bump in Jabal Sheard. I think he can be a very disruptive player, and I think he needs to be a disruptive player on this defense. Yes, there was a great question mark around his name. Would he be able to conform and perform in this defense? And it's good to hear that he is performing so well, because that has come from everybody on that coaching staff that he has gotten it.
Yep.
And that's the big thing, I think, with these guys. Do they get it?
Yeah.
And he gets it right now.
And I've heard this, by the way, from the offensive side of the ball as well as the defense, how impressed they are with Jabal Sheardon. Speaking of how this offense has dealt with this defense, you know, I think another factor in this defensive transition is how it is helping the offense perform better. And by and large, if it is what we all think it could be, and if it does take hold quickly, if there isn't a huge learning curve, although I suspect there's going to be some, and what I mean by that is when the season starts, that it progressively gets better. It might not necessarily start in the best place. That this, too, helps this team overcome Gordon's absence.
Yeah, I think so. They should be ready to go. I mean, and they'll see a lot of 3-4 throughout the year. And, you know, now they'll see it on an everyday basis because that's what their defense is running to, and they can help them out by, you know, getting them ready for games. So I think all of that is good. I just I like Ray Horton a great deal. I like talking to him. I like listening to him talk about his players because he simplifies things.
Yeah.
And he simplifies it for us too. Because sometimes when you hear coaches talk, I mean, you really feel like you're listening to a different language. That isn't so with Ray Horton. And sometimes defensive guys can be like that. But he simplifies it to the point where it's physical ability, it's speed, it's getting to the ball, it's getting there in a timely fashion, and it's getting that quarterback. And really, that's what it is all about right now in the NFL. Can you get the quarterback? Can you disrupt him before he throws because people throw so much? Can you get him off his rhythm?
Do we think, Jim, that there's going to be a lot of fierce competition for positions? I mean, I look at mostly on the defensive side of the ball because if we look at the offensive side right now, almost everything's set. You might have that question at left guard as to whether it's Jason Pinkston winning back his job versus John Greco, and a lot of that is going to be just Jason's health and how he comes back from that blood clot. And I know they're not force-feeding him too heavily, but he seems to be coming along. But as I look at the defensive side of the ball, we look at the corner spot opposite Joe Hayden. We look at the safety spot opposite T.J. Ward. We look at the inside linebacker spot next to DeQuell Jackson. And after that, it's the kicker, I guess. You know, who's going to win kicker and who's going to win punter.
Ah.
I mean, these are all – I don't want to minimize anything.
No.
But do we have scintillating
competition? I think you hit on them. I think it's that corner spot, and I definitely think it's that safety spot. And the corner spot might be, you know, the biggest bit of competition. I mean, Tashawn Gibson looks pretty good back there at safety.
Yeah.
And I know there's going to be other competition, but he seems to be a helmet ahead of everybody. But at cornerback, I think that's wide open. How good is the kid McFadden going to be? How quickly can he play? Buster Skrine really competes out there.
He does.
You know, he really does. The kid Owens really competes out there, too. But I'll tell you what, Trevin Wade is in there. He competes. But, you know, Buster Skrine kind of jumps out at you because he's in the middle of everything. He really is. He doesn't shy away from it at all. He's super aggressive. The thing is, with the defensive line, it's such a rotation thing anyway.
Right.
Does it matter that you start? Probably not, because you're going to get a number of snaps anyway. And I think most teams do it, and I certainly feel the Browns are capable of doing it now because they have pretty good depth there. And I know people are going to be in different spots. So I think the defensive line is just going to be a rotation thing. I think that secondary, those two spots, probably will get the biggest attention.
Buster Skrine makes you notice him.
He does.
And not always
and
for
not
the wrong reasons.
Yeah, not because he's small.
Yeah.
You know, it's really in spite of that. I mean, you say, wow, look at this guy. He really gets there. He's a physical player.
There's a fierceness about him, as you said, a physical sense, sometimes too physical.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that's that fine line. And I talked about this with the coaches last year, is that you're cautious about discouraging that physicality because it could really work against the player and work against the team if you're telling him to be too careful. And you don't mind sometimes aggressive mistakes. He seemed to make too many mistakes, aggressive or otherwise, and the key is, has he figured out how to temper those down? But the one thing that guy has that you have to love and respect is the speed and that closing speed, and I think that helps make up a lot of ground if you're in the wrong place. And it seems like this defense, the way things are shuffled all over the place, the guy who can adjust and recover, that recovery speed is huge.
Yeah. It's the old story of if you're the Little League coach and you put the kid in and you stick him out in right field and you say, gosh, I hope they don't hit the ball to him. But the ball always finds him, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, it's the inning where everyone hits to the opposite field. Now, with the Browns defense, I think, and, you know, the field becomes tipped to you on the other side at cornerback because people stay away from Joe Hayden so much. I mean, many, many times, Vic, last year I would look, and Hayden's uniform was white clean. Right. I mean, you know,
right.
He didn't have a grass stain on it or anything like that. And it's not because he didn't want to get involved. It was just because people were staying away from him. So they were going after Sheldon Brown, Buster Skrine, anybody else that went in there. You know, and so that's going to come your way anyway. And you have to be ready for it. And I don't think Skrine backs away from that.
No, he doesn't back away from it at all. Jim, and more that we talk about this too, the coaching, we mentioned North Turner and how the offense can handle the Gordon thing. But overall now, it's interesting to me how Rob Chudzinski handles these coming weeks as a head coach for the first time. Again, everything's a first-time experience for him as a head coach. And I sense that, he'll kick back a little bit. He was joking, I know, at the end of minicamp. I hope he wasn't joking. He says, hey, I'll be around, try to catch some Indians games. I'll try to be out and about and just enjoy life with my family. And he's got, you know, some little kids and a beautiful family. But I also see the grinder in Chudzinski not allowing him to completely just get away from this. No coach does, but I think least of all him.
Do you think he could close? I mean, the Indians have a little bit of an opening right there. If he could go in
and
get three outs in the ninth, that would be nice. I think that Rob is one of these guys that it's hard for him to totally put it away. You know, I thought he did a great job in his first build-up, in his off-season, as he got them in. He had a lot of work to do. It's a different job for him now. He's not just concerned offensively. He's got the broad picture of this team with a heavy accent on offense because that's his level of expertise. But he's got great minds over there with him on the offensive side of the ball. He's got an experienced offensive line. He's got an offensive line coach that's been here with this group for a number of years now. So now, you know, like I said, it will be interesting to watch that defense perform during training camp. It will be interesting to watch him. You know, what kind of practices will he run when you're going to start to get some attrition here of guys get nicked up when you hit? You know, how are you going to divvy up playing time with these guys? It's fascinating to watch. How much do you play Whedon? How much is too much? How much is not enough to get him ready if he's your guy? And let's say he is the guy. These are all big decisions that we'll have a better answer on in about 6 or 7 weeks.
And really, the use of Gordon is a factor because you want to get him sufficient playing time in those four games because of the two regular season games he's not going to play, and you want him certainly hitting the ground running as much as possible by game three.
Yeah, right, because now, as I understand it, Vic, now once the season starts, he's out of the picture.
He can't do anything,
But, you know, so you're going to have him, you know, and get him ready to go. The other thing is you're going to have to get somebody else ready to go, you know, for those first two games.
Right.
So that playing time and how you're going to divvy that up will be big. Last year they played that kid all the time because they wanted to get him ready for the regular season because he really had no, at least NFL offseason. Big time for Rob Chudzinski. I'm looking forward to it because I think he's handled everything else so well leading up to it.
All right, Jim, thank you so much for the breakdown, and we will catch up again next week.
We will.
This is Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
We're joined right now by Scott Petrak, who covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Scott, I want to get your big picture thoughts of the offseason. But before we go there, I just want to give you a chance to weigh in on the news of the last few days, and that, of course, being Josh Gordon's suspension and the impact you think it's going to have on the Browns.
Yeah, obviously it's a blow, Vic. I think the biggest thing is Josh is the clear number one receiver, the most talented guy, you know, 6'3", 230, runs a 4.35. So when he's there, it kind of slots all the other receivers in their right spots. Greg Little's probably best at a 2, Devon Best is a 3, and then you throw in guys like David Nelson and Travis Benjamin. So when Josh is missing, everybody kind of has to move up, and it just doesn't feel right. I think they took a break with it only being 2 games. You know, maybe you can still beat Miami in the opener, and if you get out of the first 2 games 1-1 and Josh comes back refocused, you'll be okay. But you got to question the decision-making process because, you know, you can only blame Josh for getting caught and getting suspended.
Yeah, definitely, as far as judgment and so on and so forth. But you're right about that. I think the fact that it is only 2 games and the fact that it looks like this receiving core is deeper certainly than we thought it would be a year ago. I mean, the addition of Bess and I think the overall improvement of some of the other players. I think Travis Benjamin is a better receiver than he was a year ago, and I think there's reason to think that Greg Little can step up into the role of number one guy for at least those two games.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the depth really showed during the whole mini camps. Like you said, Benjamin had a great off-season program, and I think the position is better suited to handle it, especially when you compare it to, you know, the Joe Hayden suspension from last year. The Browns didn't have that depth at corner, and it showed, and they went 0-4. And I think they're, you know, better equipped to absorb Josh not being there for two games. It's still not ideal, obviously.
As you look at the rest of what this team did through the offseason, and Josh was a big part of that story because he looked impressive. The receivers looked impressive. But I thought Brandon Whedon looked to be the guy that made the statement, this is my job, and I'm keeping it.
Oh, there's no doubt. And, you know, I've been a Whedon guy, you know, since he got here. But I thought he had a really good offseason, all the practices that we were able to watch. Especially, you know, the first practice we got to watch of the offseason, he struggled. And then he admitted it. Then he came back and threw the ball well. Every practice after that that I saw, I think North Turner's offense fits him. If you put enough pieces around him, which I think the Browns are trying to do and have done to a certain extent, then Wheaton's going to be able to flourish. He throws the ball great. And, you know, he made a couple adjustments. His footwork has gotten better. You know, he's never going to be a blazer, but he's got his footwork is better. And he removed that pad of the ball, and I concentrated that on watching that the last minicamp practice, and he doesn't do that anymore. And it allows him to get rid of the ball a little quicker, which is huge in this league. So I've been really impressed how he's kind of taken that responsibility and the job and run with it, at least to this point.
Yeah, and I like that because it's one thing to talk about it, and he did talk about it, but he really let his actions speak, and I think he took it upon himself to say, okay, there's doubts about me, and it's not the public or the media. There's doubts within this football team. I've got to prove these decision makers wrong if they question me, and I'm not even sure necessarily that they're, you know, in no way do I think they're rooting against him or think that he can't be the guy, but they're open to seeing, because he wasn't the guy they picked, they're open to seeing exactly what he's all about. And I think for Whedon's part, it's important that he went about it instead of playing afraid and fearing that if he does the wrong thing, it'll hurt him. It looks like he threw caution to the wind for the most part in these practices and was just flinging it all over the place.
Yeah, I agree with that. And even with his tone with the media, there's more of a business-like tone this year. You know, he's still friendly with us and that kind of thing, but it's, you know what, I got a job to do. There's some doubt among the media. There's some doubt within my team. I'm going to show everybody. And I do think it was important, while I know that the Browns decision-makers are still playing, you know, wait and see. He's got to prove to us that he's going to be our long-term answer. I think it's important that the coaching staff gave him every rep at the once. So that the team isn't doubting who their starting quarterback is going to be. Whedon feels, you know what, I'm getting every opportunity to secure this job and to prove who I am. So I think that's important because you don't want that cloud hanging over that quarterback position. Because if Whedon has a good year, this team can be good. So while the big picture is maybe unsettled, I think the coaches did a good job by saying, you know what, you're our guy. Go prove to us that you can be our starter.
Scott Petrek is with us. Covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Undrafted guy who has a prominent part in this defense, at least right now through these, it showed it through the offseason workouts, is Craig Robertson lining up next to DeQuell Jackson at inside linebacker.
Yeah, you know, and I think it shows you a little something about the philosophy because he's the fastest of the linebackers. You know, you got LJ Ford could be in that mix and JMJ and Tank Carter. Those guys could all start next to DeQuell, but none of them runs close to as well as Craig Robertson does. So that's what this off their defense is looking for, and they're looking to create pressure. And even from the inside spot, so you could see DeQuell rush, you could see Craig Robertson rush. And I was impressed with Craig last year, hadn't seen any of him. And then he comes out and he played a ton in nickel. You know, I think he played more than 50% of the snaps. And I thought he acquitted himself really well last year.
Yeah, I think so as well. Scott, there's so much I know we could talk about, and we'll just keep this conversation going throughout the offseason and then into training camp. But thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good, Vic.
This is Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Mike Silver covers the National Football League for Yahoo Sports. Mike, first, let's talk about the Browns. Your thoughts and perspective on all the changes that have happened here since the end of last season and your feelings about what this team might shape up like in 2013.
Well, what's really changed with the Browns this last season? Everything. It's exciting that there's a new regime, I think, for people in Cleveland, but I feel for the great fans, the great Browns fans who are so desperately looking for signs of a positive direction, seem to have them with Jimmy Haslam coming in, and now, of course, are wondering how fragile that regime may be with his outside issues. So there's that. There's Joe Banner, who seems to be actively playing out his playground angst with Jeffrey Lurie. They're old friends, and there's clearly a rivalry there, so that's interesting to me. Obviously, you've got Mike Lombardi back in the league as a GM, which I know a lot of fans weren't thrilled with that hire. They tried to sort of sneak it in after the fact and throw the title in there gratuitously, maybe, because Banner's clearly running things in the front office. But then you've got Rob Chudzinski, who's a really intriguing guy, did such great work 2 years ago with Cam Newton, now getting his shot as an NFL head coach, and Norv Turner, who we all know is an A-plus coordinator and quarterback groomer. So all very interesting. They did not go out and get that young quarterback that would displace Brandon Whedon. So they're still waiting. Got Jason Campbell there. And now Josh Gordon is suspended for 2 games. So not much going on, but, it should be a really, really interesting 2013 for the Browns.
Yeah, you covered a lot in a couple of minutes there. But, Mike, let's start with the leadership at the top, because it is a different direction for this team for sure to have the methods and ways that worked very well for the most part in Philadelphia where Joe Banner was. And then you bring in the influences of Rob Chudzinski, as you point out, had success as a coordinator in different places, here included back in 07, but most recently Carolina. And Norv Turner's influence, 14 years as a head coach as well. How important do you see those elements to shaping this team? And maybe it doesn't all, it doesn't happen in 2013, but it happens eventually.
Well, if I'm Brandon Whedon, I'm in heaven right now, assuming I, in fact, get to play this out. But, look at what, for example, Alex Smith experienced when he had Norv Turner in year two. Had a really choppy year one. And then Norv really found a way to take a young quarterback who was limited at that time and put him in position to do what he could do well, minimize the things that he didn't do as well, and really attack teams, in a way that they probably didn't expect. So Norv leaving unexpectedly, after the Chargers job opened, I think really set Alex back. And he'd probably tell you that if Norv had stayed, they could have, he could have developed into a prominent passer a lot earlier. So I think when you look at Whedon's, physical skills and, to me, he's got the right kind of temperament, to make this work. I think, having Norv there could be a godsend. And the great thing about Norv is he's not sitting there angling, trying to be a head coach again. And, being political about it. I mean, right. If it happens, it happens. But I think Norv is at peace with what he's done in his career, and he's just going to go out there, no nonsense, and try to, gain yards and score touchdowns. And, obviously, he and Chud worked together very well. Chud was understandably very, very hot coming off Newton's rookie season. Then it just started so poorly last year that, there was almost a backlash against them. And then if you really look at what they did the second half of last season, they really settled down and did some pretty good work together. So, I've heard him described as a mad scientist. I think, as an offensive, driving force in conjunction with Norv, he's going to be great. What we don't know is how he's going to be as a head coach. And, you never really know. So that'll be fun to watch.
Patriot-related item that you wrote about, and I thought was very fascinating. You sat down with Wes Welker out in Denver, and of course the former Patriot wide receiver, and basically the point of the conversation with Welker was how he likes the fact that he can be more himself with the Broncos than in the button-down world of New England, where players aren't free to really speak their mind, and Welker was punished for that. So just talk a little bit about Wes's transition and, in general, how you see that playing out in Denver with Peyton Manning and Welker.
Well, you know, you and I know so many guys who we could tell you behind the scenes we at least suspect or know they're funny, they're edgy, they've got something to say, but when they're in certain organizations, that does not come out. And Wes has always been a guy that I think in NFL circles is regarded as one of those guys that I've always felt like, wow, I wish I could really have a few beers with this guy and you know, let him let his hair down, because he'd be funny, he'd have a lot to say, and I think people would really like him. Now that he's in Denver, I think we're going to start to see that. And it's baby steps. You know, he and Tom Brady were both upset by the way that situation played out in free agency. But I still don't think we're seeing anything close to the true Wes Welker personality. And I hope he has a big year in Denver. I sort of suspect that he will. And I hope that he continues to feel more comfortable and you know, share that with America, because he's not just a really, really talented player. He's kind of an interesting guy.
Yeah, definitely. So are you, Mike, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Hey, anytime, Vic. Anytime I could come on and talk about how wrong I was, you know, you're the first one I'm going to call. But no, seriously, it's great talking to you as always. You are one of the masters of the game, and I'm just trying to stay afloat in that world.
Okay, yeah, okay. I'm Vic Carucci, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. I want to remind you to catch us at the same time next Saturday morning, and don't forget to follow me on Twitter at VICCARUCCI, and check out my blog, Carucci's Call, presented by Revel Wireless throughout the week on ClevelandBrowns.com.